I basically fell right into the pothole.
A woman fractures her ankle and wants the city of Milwaukee to replace her pothole-ridden alley.
Someone is going to get really hurt out here.
Why advocating for a new alley can be an uphill battle. Plus,
we urge consumers to really put the pressure on the manufacturers to create a solution.
A disposal dilemma in Southeast Wisconsin. What to do with disposable gas cylinders that should not go in the trash?
They get compacted inside the trucks. There's explosion potential.
From the Fox 6 Studios, this is Open Record. I'm Brian Polson, and I am joined this week by Open Record's executive producer, Sarah Smith.
Hi.
Hi.
Normally you go, hi, Sarah.
And also by Contact 6's Jenna Sachs. You know what? Hi, Jenna.
Sorry. Oh, hi.
I think I caught you off guard because it was scripted in reverse, and I introduced you first instead of Jenna. Anyway, Jenna's here. We are recording this episode on Tuesday, January 9th. For release on Thursday, January 18th.
Yep.
Boy, I had to think. We're doing this one a little bit early. Before we discuss two consumer issues that were brought to Contact 6 that we're going to be discussing going into more depth, let's talk about another big year
huge.
For Contact 6. I mean, a huge one. Yeah. Tell us about that, Jenna.
Yeah, it was exciting. We set another record for cashback totals for the consumers who reached out to our segment.
That's huge. Last year was a record, right?
It was. So last year, our viewers say we helped them save $650,000. And this year, we are credited with helping them save $679,000. So there was a last-minute resolution that came in for $40,000. It was a medical billing issue that this person says we helped them take care of. And we were pushed over that mark, which was really exciting. And we should mention, you know, refunds can come in all shapes and sizes. You know, it might be a refund check. It might be a waived bill. It might be a product repair or a replacement. But we're managing cases all the time behind the scenes. It's a good reminder that a lot of Contact 6 work happens off air. And actually, in total, we helped to resolve nearly 300 cases throughout the year of all shapes and sizes.
Well, and I even think about the two stories we're going to talk about today have nothing to do with refunds at all.
Actually,
that's just one piece of what you do, but you're very good at it. And not just you, obviously. We have Annette behind the scenes who is doing so much work to process and manage these cases, and obviously it's helping a lot of people.
Yeah, Annette has been with us for a few years now, and she will respond to every person who submits a complaint form about a business or government entity to our segment. So if you go to our website, there's a blue rectangular box on the side that says submit an inquiry with Contact 6. That's where you can do it, and we respond to every person who files a complaint. If it meets our criteria, we will send it along to the business and ask them to take a second look at your issue. And if we can't take your complaint, we'll send you resources and suggestions for how you can pursue it another way.
And
I would argue too that, like, a lot of the, you know, obviously there's the monetary thing, but you are also saving Fox 6 viewers stress and the pressure of maybe being behind on bills because they've got this gigantic whatever bill or thing looming over them.
Well, it's really frustrating when you're calling customer service over and over again, or you're sending emails and you're getting different answers, or you're getting different people, and you just feel like you're not getting anywhere. And we often do hear from people who have emotional issues tied up in this too. You know, it could have to do with funeral issues or tomb, you know, headstones. And we hear about death benefits, all sorts of things that come from someone passing or someone being hurt at work. There's a lot of issues that play into it. So we also feel like it's nice to alleviate that frustration, that anger that's building over time. And sometimes, you know, easing a bit of heartache because you just can't close this chapter and move on.
What really strikes me is, you think last week we were talking about public defenders. We were talking about people who get an attorney appointed for them because they can't afford one otherwise. And we've often talked about Contact 6 sort of being for people who can't afford attorneys, because they're dealing with a situation that may be small dollar, but it may still be very important to that person, may be very frustrating. It's not something that an attorney's going to take because there's just not enough money in it, and they have nowhere else to turn. Well, they do. they have Contact 6 to turn to.
Right. And we often hear from people, I called X amount of attorneys and they all told me my case was too small. And some of them recommended I try Contact 6 for this issue. And what we do is we send it to the business. We get someone else to take a look. If you're stuck in that customer service line, you're not necessarily getting to the person at the top. And Contact 6 has a lot of contacts who are familiar with our segment and how we work. And we can get the attention of people in the main office and the headquarters who will take a look and see if a resolution is fair or not, and maybe just reestablish that communication between sides that's broken down. I think that's where Contact 6 can really shine.
Well, and how often does it happen where, to that, to your point of the, you know, the consumer is reaching out, hitting that wall, and then Annette gets the complaint, takes the case, and reaches out to the company, and how many interviews have you done where they say within 4 days, within a week, within hours? I mean, it's amazing what happens.
It is really nice when that happens. It doesn't happen for everybody, right, but it's not unusual for us to hear that. We hear that every single month. And actually, we just interviewed a couple of people for a story about the work we did in December. And that's what they had said. I made call after call, sent email after email. One of them was told their case was closed. And then we reached out on their behalf and they heard within a couple of days from someone at the main office. And one of the women said she got her check within a week, something she had been waiting for quite some time. And the other one had a promise that the issue would be taken care of within
a few days. What really struck me about the value of Contact 6 was my own recent experience. You know, we've talked about this because I was dealing with a mobile phone company where I was getting put through from one department to another and sort of the table tennis of going back and forth from this department to that department and not get, and I just wanted to cut through and get to someone who could resolve it. And all I could think is, boy, I could really use Contact 6
right
now. And
I can't help. And you can't help me. My coworkers.
You can't help me. But I thought, now I see the value, because if I was someone who could use Contact 6, boy, that would have been perfect. You really do cut through some of that where people are stuck in that sort of low level of bouncing around, and you can get them to the people. It may not be a difficult resolution or thing to resolve, but you've got to get to the person who can resolve it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And yours was a wireless issue, right? It had to do with the mobile phone.
Yes.
So that was one of our top complaints last year. We actually did rank them by type. Mm-hmm. And so the top six, number six, warranty companies, number five, medical bills, four, wireless, TV, cable, three, banking and ATM issues. That includes some of those stolen checks we've been reporting on issues. Some of those cash checking places have refunded people. Auto repairs, number two, and number one, was home contractors, which is something we hear about every year. I think we had 76 complaints about home contractors last year. And those are people who said, you know, they took my deposit and they didn't come back, or they tore up the porch and then they disappeared for
months. And those are often the biggest dollar ones, right? Because you're dealing with...
Medical bills have been even larger lately, or certain types of benefits that people are entitled to. They need help filing a claim. But yes, home contracting issues can amount to thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars. So it's a major investment, so you can understand how frustrated our people can become when things don't go the right way or they're left feeling like they've been deserted.
Well, we've got a couple of stories we're going to talk about in this episode that have nothing to do with refunds, but they are really fascinating stories. We're going to talk about that when we come back. So Milwaukee owns and maintains more than 4,000 alleys, but fewer than 10 get replaced in any given year. And there are a couple of reasons why. The first has to do, of course, with money. So Jenna, what does the city's budget allow for when it comes to alley replacement? And really, how did you get started looking at the story?
So we heard from a woman named Shannon Bowman. She lives on Honeysuckle Drive, which is on the south, far south side of Milwaukee, almost by Oak Creek. And she was fed up with the state of the alley behind her house. And the tipping point for her was literally a tipping point. She stepped backward into a pothole while directing a car into a garage. And she fell into a pothole filled with water and fractured her ankle. So she was saying, this is it. And if you go to her alley, it's pretty bad. I mean, it was probably the worst one we saw when we were doing research for this story. There was one pothole that was like 3 feet by 4 feet, and there were several potholes. And she said, when you drive down her alley, and we did it, it's like ba-dump, 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 back and forth. Yeah. You can't have an empty cup. You can't have a cup of coffee without a lid, because it's going to slosh everywhere. So we understood why she was frustrated. So that's how it came to our attention. But she discovered, as other people have, that it's an uphill battle trying to get your alley to be chosen, because the city only has enough money to replace a small number of alleys each year, actually upwards of 8 throughout the city.
And you said how many out of how many thousand? What was it?
4,000. 4,000 plus
alleys. It's taken off a long time to replace those alleys.
And sometimes the life of an alley can be like 100 years, but this alley, Shannon's, was built, or last concrete was last laid in the 1960s, and it's not in good shape. And there are other options. They can come in and lay asphalt or, you know, just fill the potholes. They spend like $150,000 a year on that, and that doesn't cost the homeowner anything, which we'll talk about a bit, because homeowners do help pay for when their alley is replaced.
I was just doing quick math. I should have been able to do it in my head. It shouldn't have been hard to do, but 4,000 alleys, if they replace eight a year, that's 500 years to replace all the alleys. And these alleys, maybe they could last 100. They can't last 500. Right.
No, but there are a lot of factors that play into whether your alley gets chosen. It also comes down to neighbors. So the first thing is the budget, right? The city only has a limited amount of money, about $850,000 this year, the same amount as last year, to do alley replacement. And that comes out to about eight at the most per year. When we did our story last year in November, they had only replaced four. In 2023, the year before they did seven. And it just depends on the length of the alley. And it, this, we talked to Alderman Bob Bauman for the story, and he basically said, when it comes to surface infrastructure, like roads, sidewalks, traffic calming patterns, alleys, alleys are on the low end because of the number of people who use them. They're not public thoroughfares.
Right.
It's really just the people who have the abutting properties who are impacted. So that's why there's not a major call for alley replacement. He said they're just not hearing from enough people to warrant a big alley replacement.
Maybe you don't know this answer, but like, do you think that neighbors aren't maybe going to their older person about it because they just think like, where is this going
to
go?
Alleys are supposed to suck.
And they have to pony up money though too, right? I mean,
right.
It's not
so
just
the
city.
So that's the other half of this. 50% of the costs for alley replacement are assessed to abutting homeowners, which can be $2,000 to $5,000. Now they can spread that out.
Per homeowner?
Yes.
Okay.
So they can spread that out over 10 years to pay it back. But there are some people who have come to the Common Council saying, I agree with you. My alley is bad. It needs to be replaced, but I can't afford it.
Yeah.
So there's this differing perspective sometimes among neighbors about whether it's necessary or not. Mm-hmm. When I spoke with Shannon and her neighbors, who were all located on the middle of their alley where it's the worst, they seem to be on board with it. But ultimately, everyone on her alley will get the opportunity to weigh in on whether it's something they want to pay for. Not everybody has to agree.
That's my question. Yeah. What's the threshold?
Yeah. No, I think it's kind of up to the alderman to view and see how much support there seems to be, if there is enough.
Well, and they do the patchwork on the holes, question mark?
They do, but Shannon says that's a temporary fix
because it's a Band-Aid.
Over the winter there's expanding and contracting, and if you go in her alley there's just a lot of chunks of concrete and asphalt everywhere, and the
which
holes
is just as bad sometimes
big.
Is like, you know, you see those chunks of concrete or pavement and you're like, you're trying to avoid those too because those aren't great to run over either.
Well, she said, I mean, they're having damage done to their cars, you know, their tires, their rims, and that's frustrating as well because there's a cost there. Not only Shannon's fractured ankle, but everybody's having issue with their cars. You have to go really slow down this alley or else you're just going to get bounced all around.
I just always love how you take on a different issue every time and then suddenly you become, you learn things that you never would have thought you'd learn about. And in this case, just why do we have so many alleys in the first place? I mean, that was really an interesting question that you looked into.
Yeah, I did enjoy. I like looking into the history of things, so that was fun. I spoke with the Milwaukee Public Library, which is a great resource for me on a number of stories, and they provided me with some historic pictures, which was fun. But they basically said that it used to be that alleys were intended for like the less desirable functions of life to take place in. So if you had deliveries, if you had horses and stables, they were in the back in the alley. If you had coal delivery, ash pickup, garbage pickup, that was all seen as undesirable. So it was in the back.
So keep it out of sight, out of mind.
Yes,
kind of thing,
exactly.
Right? Yeah.
And they said that really changed after World War II. It's just people became more fond of residential driveways, right? Or parking lots for larger buildings. So the alleys kind of went away in terms of how many were being designed and they were replaced, but we still have them and we still need to maintain a number of them. And Milwaukee obviously has the most.
So Shannon's alley cannot be the only one in the city that's looking like a mess, right?
No. So every year, DPW, based on complaints they received, provides a list to aldermen of alleys they've identified as possible candidates. And the aldermen will check them out themselves.
They take field trips, right?
Yeah, yeah. They'll talk to neighbors, right, and then try to figure out which is the most in need. Because remember, this only comes out to like one alley every other year, yeah, per district. So they really have to prioritize. A couple of the aldermen gave me their lists, and we were able to check out the alleys that they had provided us, and they weren't great, right? They could probably be replaced, but they weren't quite as bad as Shannon's. Hers was the worst we had seen. But there are others in Milwaukee that you could argue should be replaced. But then again, it's that cost benefit analysis that everybody's doing.
But I wonder if enough of her neighbors say, no, we just don't want this assessment, we can't afford this, then does that sort of get, do they go to the bottom of the list, you know, and then they wait however many more years?
Well, her alderman, Scott Spiker, told me that he was referring DPW make hers their top priority next year, mm-hmm, and start that engineering phase where they can start estimating what it's going to cost and then come to neighbors, because they will get a say. Sometimes aldermen will send out a postcard survey. Sometimes they'll just tell people, hey, there's a public hearing, mm-hmm, coming up. Submit a comment or come and tell us what you think about it.
Is there any sort of long-term, like, you know, do we really need all these? You know, I know that there was a purpose at one time, the, mm-hmm, out of sight sort of thing. We've changed the way homes are built now and neighborhoods are constructed, and the focus is on the street and the driveways, but we've still got all these alleys. Are these, yeah, going to be here forever? Is there a view of something that could be done differently?
I know they have eliminated some of the alleys, but not close to, you know, yeah, a significant portion of them.
I almost think that would be really difficult, just because a lot of those homes, their garages are in the back, so you need, sure, a way, right, to access, yeah, them.
It would just be so much work to try to reconstruct those neighborhoods.
Right.
But, you know, we had some historic photos and we went back to try to find some of the same alleys, yeah, to match them up. And some of them are gone, right? They've, yeah, been replaced by different kinds of developments. So I think as they redesign things, alleys are not a priority anymore, but it would probably be impractical to think we'd just get rid of our alleys.
But there are some, I believe, solutions that are talked about with maybe some of the ones that are in the worst shape. I don't know.
Well, what
are
some
alleys? Yeah, yeah.
So that's kind of like a net zero benefit for this issue, but there are certain alleys that are being turned into green alleys, meaning there's a permeable pavement in the middle, mm-hmm, and there's a different drainage system for diverting storm sewer water, so we don't have the overflow, mm-hmm, issues we've had. It kind of slopes downward into the center of the road, but that doesn't do a ton for the issues on the concrete on the outside, and not every alley is going to be a practical choice for that. Mm-hmm. So that's something else the city is doing, and we are hearing about green alleys popping up more often. And that's nice for the people who live on those alleyways, because it's less expensive for them, because MMSD provides grants, which lowers the cost for that type of project, but it doesn't necessarily help everyone who's got an alley that could be replaced.
This is just completely speculating off the top of my head, but just wondering, I wonder for police how many times they're involved in pursuing someone, gosh, where the alley becomes, right, the place. Like, there are, mm, a lot of pathways to get, yeah, around that maybe in a neighborhood that just had fenced backyards or something, mm-hmm, that wouldn't be quite as simple. I don't know if that's an issue or a problem, yeah, or not. I'm not a police officer, but it just strikes me that a lot of things happen in the alley. You, yeah, talk about the undesirable things like garbage and other things, but, sure, a lot of other undesirable things sometimes, mm-hmm, happen in alleys too, because they're kind of out of sight from public view other than in those small areas.
Mm-hmm. Right. And when we were speaking with Shannon and her neighbors, their alderman had come by and said, hey, do you like the new street that they have? They had a new street that was reconstructed, yeah, nearby. And they were like, yes, but also our,
yeah,
alley. And,
yeah.
Like, we also don't like this. And Shannon was saying, you know, she has a teenage son who likes to play basketball with his friends, yeah, in the backyard. And sometimes the ball goes into the alley and she's really afraid that her son or one of his friends is going to chase it out there, mm-hmm, break a bone like she did. And, right, and then it's just a safety hazard as well.
So we talked a little bit about, you know, the older people going into their districts and you know, taking surveys among the residents. But then what if, like, maybe my older person didn't do that, but we have a really crummy alley? What's the process for someone to at least get the ball rolling?
So your options would be to, one, write to your alderman, who should contact DPW. You can also contact DPW yourself. There's contact information that can be found online, and they keep track of those complaints, and it goes into compiling their lists. There are other factors that go into that too, you know, other projects that might be going on at the same time, for example, or just surveys they've done, things they've noticed about the state of the alleys. And then it should go to engineering, get the cost estimates, provide neighbors an idea of what it will cost them individually to repair the alley, and then it goes for a vote to the Common Council, and you will have your opportunity to weigh in before then. But we do know that, you know, Shannon's alley, it sounds like it should hopefully be one discussed next year, and she would really like it to be the one they choose, because she said, someone's going to get hurt out here. I already got hurt out here, and we're all just sick of living this way. The day after we visited her, they came out, the DPW crews, and they filled the potholes, you know, with hot asphalt. And that was nice, but it's something she's seen before and she knows it's just a Band-Aid.
How long will that last when we're about to go through freeze-thaw? That's the very kind of thing that's going to cause these problems again. I just am so fascinated by these stories. We've got another one that we're going to talk about in just a moment that I think it's, we're in the middle of winter right now, but when do pitchers and catchers report? It can't be that long, right? Another month and a half? We'll be talking about tailgating season not long after that. And this is really going to be something that applies to people who love to tailgate, but we're going to talk about that when we come back. They are used by ice fishermen, outdoorsmen, and tailgaters. Retailers sell millions of them a year, but toss them in the trash or recycling bin and you risk causing a fire, maybe even a small explosion. Jenna, you found out about a problem with propane cylinder disposal. And not the big tanks, like the ones you can take back, you know, that you use with your grill.
Ones.
Yeah, that you can exchange or whatever. You're talking about these smaller tanks. What did you find out here?
Right. These are the smaller propane compressed gas cylinders that kind of screw into your portable grill or your portable heater, or maybe your blowtorch if you're doing like a DIY project around the house. So these are like 1/2 pound to 2 pounds in size. And they're not designed, most of them are not designed to be refilled. So the issue we ran into is there's just not a lot of options when it comes to safely disposing of these in Southeast Wisconsin. It takes a lot of work, and we were willing to put in that work to try to find a place that would take them. But our recycling managers, MMSD spokesperson, will tell you these should not go into the trash or recycling because of the potential for an explosion. If there is compression that takes place, whether it's at the landfill or at one of our facilities or on a truck, that can be damaging to the people who work there. It can damage our facilities and our equipment, and it can be expensive and harmful.
But what if I've got it in my grill and there's no more propane and I can't start my grill? Can't I just chuck it if it's empty?
I know, but they're saying there could be some residual propane in there that you don't know about. And under pressure, that can be a real problem. And a lot of people will think, well, I'll just call my hardware store, right? So we tried that. We called hardware stores, and most of them told me, no, we don't take them. Two told me that they would, but when I called back, one of them said, we were wrong. Actually, we don't take it. And the other one said, we'll take them, but we're just going to throw them away. So they
basically going to do the same wrong thing.
Basically, that's what they said. And then we tried salvage yards, because that's where the Propane Association and other places will tell you to try. But we had to call quite a few, and some said, well, they have to be punctured or they have to be cut, and you have to know they're empty before you bring them to us.
That sounds dangerous.
But the people who we spoke with for the story say, I don't want to take that risk. I don't want to puncture it myself. When you're saying this shouldn't go in the recycling because it could explode, I don't want to take that risk. We did eventually find one salvage yard that would take them, but it actually didn't take all of the tanks we brought to them. We had to take one back because they said it sounded like there was still something in it.
I thought it was really interesting watching this, because you did kind of guide us through that process of just trying to figure out the answer. And you think this is a consumer product. A lot of people use this product. It was designed for the purpose I'm using it for. There must be a way to dispose of this. And yet you just kept finding all these places along the way. It was like, no, you can't do it that way either.
Well, thanks for pointing that out, because I was trying to show the frustration these consumers face when they made call after call. And we mentioned also the hazardous household waste drop-off site. That seems like a natural place.
At least I could go there.
Right. No, they turn away people every day with these cylinders. They're not contracted to accept them. And that's just not an option for them either. And they accept all sorts of things at that waste site, but they don't take these tanks. And so they say, try calling the manufacturer, because the manufacturers are making a lot of money off of selling millions, tens of millions of these tanks every year. And the manufacturer who is most prominent in this industry is Worthington. They didn't respond to us when we reached out to them for this story. So it's just a circle. And we encountered exactly what these people experienced. It's just one finger pointing to someone else. And the officials in Milwaukee County who are in charge of sanitation say, we know this is a problem. We would like a solution for this problem. You know, put the pressure on the manufacturers, ask lawmakers if there's something they can do.
Well, and the people you talked with in the story, just the consumers, I mean, they didn't know what to do with them, obviously, and they've tried all the avenues. But they just had like bins of these little like tanks. Like, so what are they? I mean, they just
tanks.
Keep them in their garage,
tell,
right?
They've been like, sitting in the garage because the cardboard is like corroding. Mm-hmm. When I was carrying this box around, it was like crumbling in my hands. Yeah. But if you are a tailgater, for example, and you use one of these per tailgate, mm-hmm. it starts to add up to a collection over time. So we spoke with the Frew family in Wauwatosa. That was their experience. They like the Brewers. They go to a lot of Brewers games and they have a collection of these tanks adding up. They made a lot of calls to places, couldn't figure out where to get rid of them. And we also spoke with Michael Wylebski in Milwaukee. He got a crate of these things when he helped his dad move out of his home into a nursing home. Mm-hmm. So his dad was a handyman, used a lot of these things for welding. And so he had the same experience saying, I called the DNR, I called MMSD, I called salvage yards, and no one said they would take them as they are intact right now.
It makes me wonder, I mean, when these products are approved for sale, that there must be some regulatory structure in mind of what's going to happen on the other end. And then here you are, Contact 6, calling all these places, and no one points you to the for sure answer. Everyone sort of has, I'm really fascinated by the one place that said, yeah, we'll take it off your hands, but we're just going to throw it away too.
Right. Well, you think about paint and batteries. There's options for things like that, but not for these tanks.
And so it makes me wonder what is supposed to happen and you know, what happens with the bigger tanks after we recycle them? I assume they refill those.
So the bigger tanks are designed to be refilled. Mm-hmm. So you can either take them to like a hardware store and they'll either replace it or refill it for you. So that's a structure that's in place.
At some point, those have to be in a condition they can't be refilled to though, right?
I don't know the answer to how long the life of those tanks is, but it's certainly longer than these cylinders, which are designed for one use. And after our story aired, I heard from a couple people who said, you know, you can refill these. And that's something I intentionally did not mention in my story, because when I spoke with the officials, they said, we cannot recommend people refill these. They're not designed to be refilled. Yeah. The tanks are not as strong. And there are a lot of videos out there on YouTube. There might be products they say you can buy, but they're saying we can't endorse those because people have gotten hurt.
Well, and how do you know when they're full? Like it's not like
that's part of the problem
too. It's not like water liquid where you can see it go, oh, I know I got to turn the water off.
And there's all sorts of tips out there about like putting them in the freezer, trying to squeeze more space in there. They said we can't recommend any of that. They're not designed to be refilled. So we don't recommend doing that. But we did speak with Israel Shoket in our story, who is the co-owner of Flame King. Yep. And he makes only refillable cylinders. And
they're designed to be refilled.
Right. Designed of all sizes. He said they used to partner with some of these retailers that sell the disposable ones. And it was something that always kind of weighed on them. And they don't partner with them anymore, but you can still find their products at like Menards and Costco. So they're a major retailer. But they said, this is supposed to be a cleaner burning fuel, right? In general, it's a cleaner industry. And that's one of the benefits of propane, right? It's cleaner burning, but there's this obligation to see what you're going to do with it at the end. Mm-hmm. You have to offer a solution for people. So they wanted to have a solution for the end, saying it just seemed like something that we would be obliged to do as the manufacturers of these products.
The small canisters that are the single-use canisters, they're made of a metal that can be recycled. The question is simply the residual risk because of the residual propane that's inside them.
Exactly. Yeah. And so there are states that are tackling this. Last year, Connecticut became the first state to come up with a requirement that manufacturers do a couple of things. So they have to come up with some sort of stewardship program. So the first would be you have to provide free and accessible recycling programs. These are led by the industry. You have to provide sites where people can dispose of their tanks. You have to make it known that these sites are going to be available. And you need to educate people about the proper end of life disposal and the risks of putting these in the trash or the recycling. And so that is going into effect in Connecticut. There are a lot of other states that are either considering it or have it in some sort of stage of development right now. So Wisconsin's not one of those, I should say. So other
so you don't know if there's any lawmaker here championing this or putting together legislation.
I did not find anything about that. I know in states that have some major national parks, this has been an issue because of people who bring them camping and have left them behind. Yeah. And then it's on the campsite to dispose of them, and they have to pay a fee per tank, and that got expensive. So that's another area where it's been an issue.
Well, I was thinking about the even in Connecticut, where they're now going to have people take them to one place, you're going to have a stockpile of these things. What do they do? Do you know what the process is for making it then safe to recycle? You talked about them being punctured. But is there a safety issue with that process?
Well, Rick Myers, who is the head of Milwaukee's sanitation services, he said, we want to see ways to remove the remaining propane, the remaining fuel from these compressed cylinders, and also find a way to recycle the steel. So that sounds like what the priority is once they get these tanks. But he's saying, you know it's an issue here, but is it incumbent upon us to come up with that? We think it should be the manufacturers. So that's why he was encouraging people to take it to the manufacturers. And, you know, maybe lawmakers will consider something, but they aren't right now in Wisconsin.
So as you stand right now, after doing all of this research, if someone's heading off to the ice shanty this winter, or if they are going to a tailgate this spring, what should they just avoid using these disposable tanks, or what do you do?
Well, I mean, you can do what we do, which is call around and try to find a scrapyard that will take them. You know, there is the option of these refillable cylinders, which do cost a little bit more upfront, but over time, the more you refill it, there would be a savings there. But, you know, people are in their habits. They have their products, but it is entirely possible for an ice fisherman to go through dozens of these, you know, keeping themselves heated in their shanties over the winter.
Well, and you said you found the one scrapyard. And you took a box of the crate of those, and you said they took some of them. Did they give a reason why they didn't take
other ones? They did a shake test, and they said this one still has some liquid in it. So they sent it back. So they took six of the seven that we brought to them, and the family was happy with that. Yeah. So I don't know what they're going to do with the remaining. Yeah. Maybe they'll try to burn it off or something. Maybe it's too old to do that.
Was that free? Was that free?
It was free. They didn't ask for any charge. Okay. I know other people I spoke with for the story said they had encountered places that said there would be a charge. Mm-hmm. I didn't come across that.
Did anyone talk about the propane adapters for the 20-pound tanks? Because that's what I use now. I completely went away from those small tanks. I use a big one. It's a hose that goes to my heater or to the grill or anything.
So we didn't really talk about the 20-pound tanks because those aren't really an issue with recycling so much as the smaller ones.
I meant more of a way, like if you want to
get away from the small ones.
The small tanks altogether and just use the big tank for all your
Sure, that's certainly appliances. An option. I don't know if everyone's going to think of going that route. It's certainly not something that not as, was like, brought to our attention.
Well, and two, if you're going to go tailgating, I know those propane tanks can get heavy.
The portability is obviously the attraction.
Yeah, these are pretty light.
For something like a, you know, like on your patio, you have those heaters. That might be a different story.
If you're going out on the ice or you're going camping. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What I really think about is just for most of us, it's the path of least resistance. So if I had to make all the calls that you had to make and do all those things, a lot of people are probably just going, forget it. I'm chucking it. No one's going
to
care.
That's what the people I interviewed were worried about, saying it was just so much work to figure out what to do with these. I worry that people are just going to say, I give up and put them in the trash and hope for the best. But it's not an inconvenience until it starts to pile up in the corner of your garage.
Right.
And the pile gets bigger and bigger.
Yeah. Well, I think that's probably a good time for us to go off the record. So we're going to do that when we come right back. And it is time for us to go off the record. This is the part of the podcast where we get a little more casual and have a little fun by answering a question for which we have not prepared. But of course, Sarah Smith has prepared for it because she came up with the question. So what do you have?
I sure did. Okay. This might incite a lot of conversation. I don't know. Maybe nothing. What a way to set that up, huh? What is something, we're all married. Let me start with that. What is something you should ask your future spouse before you get married?
Are we going to get super deep? Because this could be serious.
Well, no. Serious. I'm thinking like surface level. Like my first thought was, how do you load a dishwasher? we're not going like, what is your insight on life? Or how financially prepared are you for retirement? Those are kind of like the given ones, right? But like,
Judaism? It's not like that, right?
A little more trivial? We don't need to go deep.
Well, like, was dishwasher yours?
No, I'm also thinking like, how do you load the toilet paper on the roll? Do you go up and over or down? And clearly it's up and over, but
you pull from
the top. You don't pull from the bottom.
Except if you have pets that go like this and then the roll just keeps coming.
Yeah, that's fine. Cats are dumb.
Cat defense, but I don't have cats. So over the top. I agree.
Okay. 100%. So I know a lot of people like end up living with someone before they end up getting married these days. So this would probably be figured out, but snoring, I think that's a big one. Like I could not sleep next to someone who snores. If my husband, you know, if he's really tired or he's sick or something and he snores, yeah, he gets like, I aggressively roll over because I know he's a light sleeper too. And he'll wake up and like reposition himself.
You aggressively, you don't do the like shove?
I don't need to do a shove. Okay. We're both light sleepers, but I can't. And he usually doesn't snore. It's like an illness thing. But I could not sleep next to a snorer. I probably would have to leave.
So we're not going to sleep in the same bed, Jenna? I'm like a snorer.
I'm too light of a sleeper.
I think it's like a deep breather is what I call myself. I've never heard it. My husband, though, he like, he doesn't like push or like wake me up in that. He like shakes the bed almost like it's a boat.
Is it a water bed?
He just shifts his weight around. So the mattress, it's on like pedestal things. Mm-hmm. And then that wakes me up just enough to like roll me over.
I have a friend who will literally like pretend, to, you know, I was sleeping. Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to kick you there. No.
My wife will let me know if there's any snoring going on there. I feel a little hand in the back like, hey, you know, she's not just doing the aggressive rollover. That's passive aggressive, right? The aggressive rollover. She's just lets me know, no, that's it. You know, wake up and snap out of it. But
sounds like I'm a man who
but
snores.
I don't know how badly I snore because I'm the one who's asleep, but I hope it's not all that bad. I guess others could tell me if that's the case. But my wife, we were going to invite her on the podcast to talk about what my snoring is like. I don't know. What would be the thing that I would want
to
know?
Do you need to find out before something?
I mean,
I
think I need to know, like, can you know, are you going to have a problem with me watching, you know, the Packers, or for me, it's the St. Louis Cardinals baseball. You're going to have a problem with me watching sports.
Right.
I'm not someone who watches sports constantly. Mm-hmm. It's not like Sunday football is on from morning until night. Yeah. It used to be that way years ago. So I'm not like that, but I got to know you're okay with it. And my wife is great. If there's a game that I want to watch, she'll say, hey, I'm going to sit here and read. You watch your game. Yeah. That's perfect.
Right.
I think that's quality time, an important one. Yeah.
What about music? Like if your significant other listens to a music style that you dislike.
Ooh.
It hasn't been an issue for me.
It hasn't been an issue. I mean,
me neither. But
right now, we're not in charge of the music that's playing.
You're not wrong.
No, that's
anyway,
a good point.
The small people are. But, you know, you can get used to anything. I think you could get used to music.
Okay.
Unless it was just so horrible.
Yeah.
You know, if it's like complete like rocking out all the time.
Isn't that the great thing about earbuds, though?
That's
because I go on trips with the kids in the car and they've each got their own thing and I put my earbuds in and I've got music or a podcast and mm-hmm. I'm happy. You know, I just drive on the road and listen to open record the whole way.
You know what? No. You can too.
But I do like the idea that I can isolate that way.
Yeah,
and with noise canceling is fantastic. And that's when I get the push in the back too, is the kid in the back of the car. Are we stopping to get, you know, snacks?
I thought you were singing too loud, but you do have a nice voice. So
I don't know if it sounds that way in a car. Well, when you can't hear the accompaniment.
The acoustic.
Yeah, when it's just a cappella, Brian, in the driver's seat, that's probably not.
I don't know.
Probably not very good.
Do you have one?
In these things, this is nowhere near being like a deal breaker thing, but I sometimes put stuff on the counter and Jazz is a little more OCD, my wife, and it will just be gone. And I'll look around and I'll say, hey, where's this thing? And she's like, oh, I put it in the closet or something there. And apparently I leave stuff.
Are they items
I have
like
the same problem.
Like kitchen things, or are they like papers and things?
No, it's like my keys or my work badge or
right in the cabinet.
Okay, my but you are married to her and you are happy in that.
Oh, yes. So like I said, like there's it's not a deal breaker.
Okay.
This or stuff in the refrigerator, right?
So I do the refrigerator thing. Mm-hmm. I leave it on the counter. Although I would argue my husband's a little too quick to be like, are we going to put this milk? Do you need this milk still?
I swear to God, I'm a man. I do the same thing where I mm-hmm. put stuff away and Eric's like, where did the leftovers go that were on the counter? Right. I was like, oh, I put them away. Oh, I wasn't done yet. Okay, well, I didn't know.
But I'm guilty of like a half-drunk can of LaCroix. Like, I'll find it and I'll just empty it.
You're the dumper.
You know, if I'm cleaning.
You're not the offender.
Like, sometimes when I want control, I'll clean like one room and I'll really attack it.
Yes.
And the rest of the house, whatever, but one space. And if there's a can of something, it's probably getting
it. All right, so I go in the refrigerator and I sometimes feel like it's just been reorganized.
Oh.
So I'm looking for something, and it's like, it's always right
here.
Sauce
is always
and
right
And I'm like,
there.
Where's this thing? And she's like, it's right there. I'm like, I don't see it. But
Of course you don't see it.
I only see
you
like
with
the
your man eyes.
First row of things. I cannot see what's behind the first row.
Depth perception
if
is
you
a little
have, off. If you have a lot of, you know, if there are dishes that are still left out and you want them done, but they haven't been done, Do you do the also passive aggressive? Do you do the loud dish doing? Like you're slamming
I'm letting
dishes
you know to that, let you know that
I'm doing the dishes?
Yeah, I've done that.
Yeah.
Or like someone's sleeping really late and you're like, I think I'm going to put away the dishes.
Oh, that's a very mom move.
It is, isn't it? I'm like, you know, I've been up for a few hours. Yeah, right.
I've been told I slam cupboard doors, but I'm not doing it on purpose, but apparently
really
I post them loudly.
Well, I have an off-the-record question of my own because we have one more commercial break. We didn't plan well enough to not have one commercial break left. So we're gonna, when we come back, I have my own secondary off-the-record question right after this. Okay, we are back, and this is really the first time we've ever done this, but we're going to have a secondary off-the-record question.
This is the part of the podcast
where Brian has one. But this is, and this actually comes up because last night, my wife and I watched a movie that I hadn't seen in many years, but it's one of my favorite movies, Airplane, Zucker Brothers, Shorewood. Mm-hmm. And I'm the kind of person who quotes movies, all because you know the old movie.
Yeah.
So how are you on, like, do you love movie quoters? Do you quote movies? Or does it drive you crazy when someone around you quotes old movies?
If it's a movie that we've all seen a bunch of times and we're all quoting, I feel like I'm cool with that.
But what qualifies that? Or what? Because like I could quote Tommy Boy. I don't know that everyone has seen Tommy Boy.
Half a million. Yeah, right. I'll do that all day long.
That's not what I quote from Tommy Boy. But
do you quote from Tommy Boy?
Now that on the spot, I can't think of. I don't know.
All right.
Six packs of soda.
Not so
yes,
much here.
Tommy, or anything
here.
Is that the one where it's like, I got dibs on top bunk?
No, that's Step Brothers.
No, I thought it was in Tommy Boy 2. Didn't they like share a room?
Tommy Boy 2.
No. I mean, as well.
I've watched Tommy Boy 2. I would in a heartbeat. But the Tommy Boy, that's the, there's the, that Callahan, guy
yeah,
in a little.
Yeah, right. Auto. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I mean, I will say that I do sometimes quote movies, but I feel like I try to keep them. Movies that people have seen. I don't go too deep in them.
Do you quote movies? Does your husband?
Not a ton. I don't think we watch a lot of the same things. Like I'll watch like Great British Bake Off and he's just not watching that. Like there's one thing we sometimes quote and I don't even know the name of the movie, but it was like Jennifer Garner was sending a new kid off to school and she was like, have a great day. And the dad said, that's too much pressure. And she goes, have the day you have. And so that's sometimes we're like, have a good day or just have the day you have.
Yeah.
You know, well, that's like the only thing that we've ever really
so
quoted.
He's not like quoting Fletch and other old movies all the time and it drives you crazy.
I don't think
I drive
really
my wife crazy
movies.
That's why I brought this up.
But do you watch those movies over and over? I don't have the retention to recall some of these lines. Like
when
some
I was
from
younger
Airplane
I watched some of them.
Kindergarten Cop and
I
stuff.
I probably watched Fletch 20 or 30 times realistically. I mean,
was
really
it that
did.
Good?
Yeah,
cinematic.
Absolutely. The original National Lampoon's Vacation.
Okay, yes, 100%. That's 100%.
Those are movies that I've watched over and over. So I will, Office Space, one of my favorites of all time.
Office Space, yes.
I will quote that all the time. And the problem is I'll want to rewatch them sometimes and my wife will say, I will watch.
And as long
if
as you
shut
don't.
Your mouth. Because I don't want to hear the movie
because you become
before
a star,
it's happening.
A starring actor
because
in it.
As soon as I see the scene, I'm like, oh, this is the one. And then I quote the scene before it happens. She's like, why
and
are
she's
we watching?
Turning the volume up to like, drown you out.
You might not like watching a movie with me because I am a subtitle person.
What?
Oh, no. No.
I'm Team Jenna. We've become,
no.
We know.
I've done this since I was a kid because my dad always had the subtitles up so we didn't miss anything. And so
but then
I,
you're missing the movie. You're missing scenes.
No, it supplements the movie.
No, it does. I am totally capable of watching both.
How many times have you, we can speak to this because we're closed captioning people. How many times have you, for the first time, understood what someone said only because of the closed captioning because it was whispered or it was background or something you're like, oh,
but
that's what
if I watch a movie without it, I go, what? But what did he say? I don't know what he said.
Wow.
I got to tell you, we were watching Airplane and for the first time we had closed captioning on. For the first time, I got all the words of the jive talking scene.
Oh,
it's
so
the first time ever.
It was
It was eye-opening. It was fantastic.
Wow. It gets in the way of my experience.
Yes. It's like distracting to me.
Now, where I do turn off closed captioning is then when we watch sports because it's in the middle of the field. And you can't have that. So I turn it off during sports. But we started this because my wife was watching Peaky Blinders. If you've ever watched it, they have a very thick Irish accent.
That is a really,
really
hard
to understand.
Okay.
And that's when we started it. And then we were like, you know what? This isn't so bad. And also we're old people.
Okay.
So we're officially closed captioners.
I think I've worn my husband down. He doesn't try anymore. He used to be like, really? But
not
he's accepted it now. Yeah. And I think my kids will probably just, I think they don't even see it.
we're having Jenna's family over for movie night. You guys can't, you don't have to come, but we're having closed captioning on ours. Okay. We have to take one more break and we'll wrap things up when we come right back. We are back, and in the break, we were still talking about this because I just feel like that. I mean, we just found a divisive topic.
Wow.
Do you watch with closed captions on or not? I'm a big fan, and so don't come to my house for movie night if you don't like the captions on, because they're going to be on. So I think that pretty much wraps things up this week. Jenna, thank you for being on, talking about your stories, and again, another great successful year for Contact 6.
Oh, thank you. I'm always happy to be here.
Of course, Sarah, always, thank you for being here. If you have a topic you would like us to discuss on Open Record or an issue you think we should investigate for Fox 6 News, send us an email to fox6investigators@fox.com. As always, thank you to the people who make this podcast possible, including our executive producer, Sarah Smith, our editor, Dave Machuda, and our chief photographer manning the video switcher, Kale Zimney. I realize I'm a little early here, so we got a little more. This is like when you're on one of those, like a radio show. We got a minute to kill. Yeah, we got 60 seconds.
The producer in me is chit-chat. Like, oh gosh, 1 minute to fill.
I wonder if anybody's got closed captioning on for this one.
If this were watching a show, we'd go, this is weather. Tom, what's the weather?
Stretch.
One more quick weather.
Stretch.
Yep.
I don't know. All I know is now that I do watch closed captions, one thing that I noticed that comes up a lot is I now know what pensive music is.
Oh, they, I always, do like they, it when like, they label the music.
It's not just the words people are saying. It's the descriptions of things in the background, like upbeat pensive music. Mm-hmm. Angry dog barks, things like that.
There's a lot of dog barks.
You get a lot of those. And so, I don't know. I enjoy it. It entertains me. Anyway, I think that's all we've got for this week. So sure. We'll be back again next week. With that, I'm Brian Polson. We'll see you next time.